thought it was really ours. But then I experienced the hassles of claiming land. It sets families apart. Before, my family knew exactly where someone's boundaries were. I heard someone say there was no boundaries, but there's unsaid boundaries where people have done subsistence fishing, or where they go berry picking. Sometimes you go as a group, but there's always one section where just certain families go. And so I knew that. And then when ANCSA came around, people filed for land or filed for allotments, and it was like everybody for himself, so those boundaries were violated. And this summer, this is just a process that I thought was disturbing. This summer, it's now 1985. In 1971, I had applied for my native allotment. And so this summer, as I stopped by the BIA office in Anchorage, I thought I'd request that my allotment be surveyed. And I found mine was ready, my father's was ready, and then I asked for my mother's too, and they had no record of my mother's allotment ever having been filled, or an application was never filed, and so hers is lost. And so I wonder how many allotments are lost. Then there are those who hadn't filed either through absence or not being aware. And those are some of the issues I find disturbing. I've been out of contact with the ANCSA issue or the village issues mainly because I've gotten into another field. And as an educator, one of my concerns is how can we help our young to survive the 1991 issues? And I'm hoping during the convention this coming week we'll address that issue and maybe make a resolution. I'd also like the newborns to be included. I don't have any suggestions for improvement, and these are just some of the issues or things that I've come across.
The point that Mr. Nielsen made about bringing the newborns into the settlement. Newborns, some of them are
kids
are 14
after
years old now.
Mm-hmm.
But what if the newborns are brought into the settlement, that means the value of the shares held by everybody else will diminish. Does that matter to you?
Well, I think the newborn should be included because they're part of the family. If that diminishes, I don't know, maybe there's something that can be done about it, but I think they should be included. Otherwise, they'd feel segregated.
Yeah. Okay, thanks very much, Ms. Klein.
Welcome, Justice Berger. Welcome to Dillingham and to Chugging Limited. My name is Robin Samuelson. I'm a shareholder of BBNC, our regional profit corporation, and Chugging Limited, the village profit corporation. I'm also a member of two native nonprofit arms, BBNA and Dillingham Village Council. I have had the privilege of sitting on the board of directors of Chugging Limited for the last 10 to 12 years. This testimony I'm about to give is my own personal testimony and does not reflect or try to reflect the Chugging Board of Directors' feelings towards 1991 or the Land Claim Settlement Act. In the 60s and early 70s, Congress and the oil companies wanted to get the natives off their backs. Oil, Oil on the frozen North Slope had to be extracted and transported to the lower 48 for a energy-starved nation. The native leaders of that time had a dream to some that was too far-fetched to conceive of, a dream that would bore the title Alaska Native Land Claim Settlement Act. This dream came to reality when then-President Nixon put his signature on the bottom line. The date was December 19, 1971. The Settlement Act was born. It also cleared the way for the oil companies to begin work on the North Slope and put the pipeline through Alaska. The state was split into 12 regional corporations and 200 or so village corporations. We had profit arms and non-profit arms. We, the native people of Alaska, finally had land and money. We all thought we had the best of both worlds. With all our money, we could go out and buy businesses or start new ones and make a lot of money for our shareholders. Well, it didn't work out that way for some. Many regional and village corporations woke up too late. Most of their money was gone, shareholders as well as family members fighting against each other. Was this the native way? What did this act that passed in 1971 do to us? Were we set up for failure? Money as well as land. Was this act set up so attorneys and consultants grew richer and native shareholders grew poorer, and in the end, they'd lose their land? A part of me says yes, and the other half says no. As I stated earlier, I sit on the board of directors of Chugyung Limited, a profit-making corporation. Chugyung Limited has roughly 1,039 shareholders. We, the board, have taken the money, the land, and the act, and tried to make them all work for the betterment of our shareholders. This has been a very hard hill to climb. Although we've been making a profit and declaring dividends, we are still looking over our shoulder. Our problems are large. 1991 and beyond is coming. I look at 1991 as a stepping stone for our shareholders. In 1971, when the Native Claims Act passed, it was far from being perfect. Study after study was done on it, trying to interpret the intent and meaning. Now 1991 is coming. We know what we want, the act to say now. We want the land to stay in native control. Land protection is foremost. We cannot risk the loss of losing our land. If we lose our land, we will be history. I would also like to see our stock restricted, so our corporations will stay in native control, but I'm also in favor of dissenters' rights. If a shareholder wants out and I want to remain in a corporation, so be it. So be it. He has his rights, I have mine. We'll have to all make the personal choice. Newborns are afterborns. I have two newborns or afterborns in my family. One born in 1977, the other born in 1980. Both do not own stock in our corporation. I'm against diluting my stock or allowing newborns into the corporation. When a person owns stock in any corporation, that person hopes that that stock will increase in value, not decrease or get diluted. My newborn children will become shareholders in time. They will inherit my wife's stock as well as mine. I feel my kids are my legal heirs. Regardless of Bud Quantum, they should get my stock. What I own is what they own. They are newborns today, but tomorrow they will be shareholders. They are our future. I have heard of a lot of talk about alternative organizations, namely UTAs and IRAs. I feel that to spend millions of dollars and 14 years learning the process of ANSCA than to drop ANSCA and go to another organization would be disastrous. I support ANSCA with all of its problems. I feel we got the best deal out of the federal government of any native people on earth. Which other native group of people were even come close to what we received in 1971? None that I know of. We all know the act was not perfect. Congress realizes this also. Amendments have been made to the act before. We are now about to make amendments for 1991 to protect ourselves. This is the process. The process and amendments will not stop on 1991. The process and progression of Native people will always continue. We are survivors, and we will continue to survive as long as we have our land, honest management, and we all stand together. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Samuelson. Thank you very much.
My name is Barbara Riley Asher, and before I begin, I'd like to commend and thank you, Judge Berger, for undertaking this tremendous task of finding out from the people themselves how ANSCA has affected them. You are someone who can formulate, hopefully, an unbiased opinion simply because you are not on a corporation payroll. You are not concerned about being elected or re-elected to a village or corporation board, and you are not concerned about making a profit for either corporation. So hopefully when you give your final report, it will reflect how our Native people honestly feel, how ANSCA has either benefited them or not benefited them, and your report hopefully will benefit not only us Native people, but other peoples who are thinking about making a Native settlement also. You have probably heard again and again how little the majority of our Native peoples have benefited from ANSCA. Unfortunately, I must say it again. I believe that ANSCA has not economically benefited the majority of Native Alaskans. You've heard from the people who represent me. I'm a shareholder of BBNC and also a shareholder of Chugyong. From a monetary viewpoint, I feel that many of our Native people have probably received more benefit from the State of Alaska Permanent Fund than from the ANSCA settlement. And the Permanent Fund benefits not only Native Alaskans, but also non-Native Alaskans. But I think to most of us Native people, money is a secondary concern. Our main concern is for our land. And I know that some Native folks from other corporations have benefited directly from ANSCA regarding land. They've received a parcel, be it 1 to 5+ acres. But folks from other corporations haven't even received this benefit. And many of us younger shareholders depend on receiving some land from our elders who were smart or lucky enough to have received Native allotments. But there are still many, many Natives who did not file for Native allotments, or as Dora said, her mother's was completely lost. So they are still out in the cold regarding receiving any land per se. We also know that some of the regional and village corporations are selling land, selling our prime asset to make a profit. Some of the corporations feel that they are giving shareholders a break by giving us first chance at buying the land. But at $17,000 to $18,000 plus per acre, some of us can't afford it. and that's a major concern. Corporations are saying that in the long run, we as shareholders are benefiting by them selling our prime assets, our land. But if this precious asset, our land, is gone from our control, I feel that we Native people lose in the long run. We then have to worry about subsistence. Where can we go hunting? Where can we fish? Where can we even go berry picking? Or do we have to worry about going for a walk over somebody's land and then being told that we are trespassing? I also think it's crazy that we shareholders, if we have to go and buy our land back from the village or the regional corporation, when Anska said the land belonged to us, you know, originally. And another concern is losing control. Everybody is talking about 1991 and Native people losing control. We've heard talk about reservations for the Indian people in the lower 48. I know those are fraught with a lot of problems. And before Congress made amendments to reservations, a lot of the Indian people sold their land that they were given. But now the Indian tribes at least own some of that, some land, some place that they can say is theirs. But Congress did not give us a way to permanently keep what land they gave us in 1971, at least not yet. If the corporations can remain under Native control, maybe we can continue to live and subsist off our land as we have been and as we wish to. But even keeping a corporation under Native control is no guarantee our land will be safe or our other assets. We have to worry about squatters' rights or adverse possession, loss through taxation, or even greed. Big bucks can sway just about anybody. So Native shareholders still have to remain on our toes and really choose our Native leadership carefully and remain involved. We Native people will still have to protect what is ours, even if there are some amendments made by Congress. But the big concern about 1991 is losing Native control. If that happens, it's a guessing game as to what can occur. I believe that the loss will be more than we can even imagine. Termination of control of our land and our subsistence way of life as we know it now. Termination of control of our other assets. But hopefully what will never happen, even if we do lose control, is that our Native people will always continue to have self-pride and confidence of who they are and who they can become. We've heard a couple of opinions about afterborns, those born after 1971. I myself have two children who were born after 1971, and they do not benefit directly from Anska law. Some shareholders want no provisions written in to include these afterborns, because they feel it will decrease their share of the benefit. I know that I will equally distribute my shares, and I know a number of shareholders will do that, but some may not. There may be favorites, so that will leave a number out of the after. A number of our afterborns will not benefit at all. I'm not sure how many of our people in this community know about the Osage Indian head right situation in Oklahoma, but I'm quite familiar with that. When the Osage Indians were first enrolled, I think, in the 1800s, just as we had to enroll in 1971, there were about 2,000 Osage Indians at that time. But now in 1985, there are about 5,000 Osage Indians. But only those who have a head right, or 2,000, have voting privileges, or they benefit directly from oil royalty. Now that's only 2/5 of the population, and some people hold more than one head right, so that may be even less than 2/5 of that population. As more generations of our own Native people are born, and as we original shareholders die off, if no provision is made for those afterborns, I think we're really selecting out maybe a separate class of natives. As Dora said, we believe in the native people, believe in the family unit. We take care of each other, and I think this is one area that we really need to work on now. So what are the alternatives? I'm not really familiar with all of the legal aspects, but I would really hope that those representing us would find ways to protect our land forever so it will be available for use by natives during my lifetime and for future generations. And we really need to find some way to provide for those born after 1971. We've heard of a lot of options, but if we don't make some sort of provision for them, I think we're really going to lose, you know, our sense of family even more. That's all I have to say, and I thank you for listening.
Yes, thanks very much, Ms. Asher. Thank you. Well, we've had half a dozen very thoughtful presentations this afternoon, it illustrates what I said to Mr. Nielsen. These are not easy questions to sort out. Maybe while we're waiting, Ms. Asher, if you don't mind coming back, I could ask you a couple of questions. They're not all rushing to the mic there to speak, so. Just this question about the selling of shares. Have you thought about that? If right now you can't sell your shares to anybody.
Yes.
And even if a non-native person acquires them by transmission, they can't vote them. Do you think there should be restrictions on shares, on the sale of shares after 1991, so they couldn't be sold to non-natives? Or do you think people should have the right to sell them if they want to get something out of it? You were here when I was talking to Mr. Nielsen and the other gentleman about it.
Well, we live in the United States, and it's a country of choice. I know myself that I would not sell my shares. But if my sister or brother wanted to sell their shares, then I can't say you don't have that right. It would be like imposing my belief upon them. I really think that people should have a choice. Mm-hmm. I would prefer that they not sell, and I think if people were seeing more benefit from owning those shares, then I think they probably would think maybe 10 times before they consider selling. It's just like when the limited entry permits first came out. They sold for not very much money when people were first starting to sell them, and now we're talking, you know, for a drift permit, $100,000+. So Native people really think, you know, a lot before they would sell a limited entry permit.
But some of them have sold, haven't they?
Right at the beginning, yes. And I suppose even now, some people are not as fortunate as I am. You know, they don't have Well, a stable economic base, especially those who live out in the more rural areas. And it would be a lot easier, I mean, if they could get money to pay, you know, for food on the table. Even though it's something that occurs right now and not, you know, for the long run, I can't see letting somebody go hungry either. I mean, if that was the option, I would hope within the Native community, you know, that it wouldn't get to become that type of option. But
yeah, because you see, what troubles me a little bit about this is that you say that it's a matter of personal choice, and that's what Mr. Samuelson said. But it seems to me some of those folks who sold those limited entry permits must not at the time have thought it was a question of personal choice. They may have thought they had no choice. They needed the money. That's what troubles me about it.
And it's, I think it will vary also from each region that you go to. If you go to a real rural area where things are much more expensive than the urban areas, it will be more of an incentive to sell if they needed the money, especially if they're not seeing economic benefit already from holding those shares. And some of them, I think it's education also, especially our Yupik or our Inupiaq speaking people who really don't have a good grasp of English, for them to understand the long-term either benefit or detriment of keeping or holding their shares. So it's education, too. I don't think our people have been fully educated yet about ANSCA and what can happen if, you know, if we lose control. Even though, you know, ANSCA was passed in 71 and it's now 1985, there's still a lot of people, and even myself, who have questions about, you know, everything that ANSCA means.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks very much.
My name is Laura Schroeder, and I'm from Dillingham. And I don't speak or represent either Equoc Native Village Corporation, which I represent as business manager, or the City of Aleutnagig, which I represent as consultant. I speak as a white woman that is able to vote the shares of BBNC stock, Chagyon stock, and attend the Dillingham Village Council meetings, although I cannot vote in any way at those meetings. My son is a shareholder through stock that was inherited when his father died in 1980. He's also the owner of a limited entry permit and of a 32-foot fish boat, even though he's 12 years old. He came into ownership of all of this stuff at the age of 8. As the mother of a Native shareholder, I consider all of these things his heritage. I would not in any way, no matter how hard up I was, and I say that realizing that times can change, but I have been through some hard times, even consider allowing any of these to be sold. I feel it's a heritage that if anybody decides to sell it, he should after the age of 18 years old. I've been city manager in the city of Dillingham for 5 years, during the time it grew from 907 people to a population of around 2,000 people. I'm from the state of Maine and have watched the state of Maine develop. When I first ran a flying service in Maine, the area was relatively undeveloped, and Harvey Samuelson Sr. spoke of fishing companies owning all the stuff here. In Maine, lumber companies own it all, have acquired it and owned it for years and years and years, tie up all the land. Great Northern Paper Company, Scott Paper Company, International Paper Company, St. Regis Paper Company were some of the most lucrative customers that I had. I've seen development. I've seen development in Labrador. I've seen rivers that some of the most famous fishing rivers in the world and the iron ore come along, and I've seen the railroad trains truck down the side of those rivers with all the iron ore to the village of Seven Islands. I don't believe that many of the people in the villages that I travel to and the people that I talk to even understand the 1971 Land Claim Settlement Act, and no ways near do they understand the resolutions that are now going around to the villages. I do not find fault with the education process that's being conducted on it, because I believe that it's just a tremendous thing, and no matter how much time you had, you still might not really reach all of the people and have them understand all of the different things in relation to it. When I vote the shares, if I vote them myself and do not give them by proxy, which I usually do, I try to determine my vote on what I think is in the best interest of a Native son, because I vote his heritage. I don't think that the control of the lands should change from the Native corporations. I feel that they've fought all of these legal battles for the years since 71. They've learned something, and to turn around and give the control of the lands and the stock to anybody else is just starting out the same legal battles and the fighting all over again. I'm not going to say that I thoroughly understand all of the resolutions, because I do not. I have traveled in two villages on 1991 meeting issues, assisted in putting them on, one in Equok and one in Neustuyahawk, and the people in Neustuyahawk, one comment was, why now? Why not a long time ago? Why didn't somebody come and tell us about some of these things? But some of the people that attended that meeting I visited with 2 days ago in Equok, you know, and they still have the same questions. I got a telephone call the other day from a person in Equok asking me, did I really realize what these resolutions were all about, and how much thought should be given to them, and did the Native Corporation members? And I'm sure they do, but I don't know that anybody really knows enough about it to make any great changes in what's been projected. Anyhow, I feel that Native people should value their stock and also their land. And I know from experience that some limited entry permits were sold for $2,000, and the people really did not understand, and I'm talking even as short time ago as 1979, the village of Neustuyahawk, and I just don't think that they had any idea of the value of those permits. And I also think that they thought that somehow they might be able to find some other way to fish, which they found out they cannot, without buying one. I just think Native people need to be really educated in what the value of all this is. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schroeder.
My name is Tom Tilden, and I live here in Dillingham, a shareholder here at Chugyung. And I was brought up in the village of Portage Creek during my growing years. And I'll always remember the years that I lived in Portage Creek, because I learned a lot more than I probably would have learned here in Dillingham. During my years in Portage Creek, I learned how important it was to share, because I seen the people in the springtime when they had nothing. They were starving, but they shared with one another. And that sharing was the way I figured was the survival of the people. As I grew up, I moved to Dillingham here, went to school, and after school I worked for most all of the Native organizations. I worked for BBNC, BBNA, BBHC, in different capacities. For BBNC, I worked as a liaison officer, and my job was to go out and train and teach people and help them set up their village corporations. I was all excited. I thought the Land Claim Settlement Act was a real big thing for the Native people. Then when I got out to the villages and looked at some of the village people and started talking to them about stocks, land conveyances, corporations, shareholders meetings, There was a look in the village people of bewilderment. They were scared. Even I was scared. I was wondering whether I was saying the right things to them. Or maybe I was afraid that I would mislead them in a way. A lot of things have happened since then. Now we're faced with the 1991 issue. Back then, 1991 wasn't anything. It was the organization of the first shareholders meetings, getting the new board members on the corporations that were priorities. Now in 6 years, we're going to find out whether all of this was worth it or not. I am by all means not an expert. All I am is a shareholder. I have traveled to all 32 villages within the Bristol Bay area here, and I've seen a lot of changes in these villages. I've seen a lot of changes on the councils, the people that represent the people. There's been a big change on the village councils. I've seen them go from older people to a lot of younger people. The older people have kind of shied away from some of the councils now because it's getting too complicated and they're afraid. They can't read all the literature that's coming to them. And so they've bowed and stood aside and let some of the younger people run the councils now. And they are still acting in advisory capacities. I think someone earlier stated or talked about who benefited most from Manska. Was it me as a shareholder? Or was it a board member on one of the village or regional corporations? I, as a shareholder, have received $30 on a quarter from my regional corporation and a few hundred dollars from my village corporation. As a board member, however, I would probably benefited a lot more. I would have been able to set my own fee for attending the meetings. I would have had access to some lawyers, bankers, and a whole bunch of other side benefits as a board member. BB&C has done a survey here within the region, and they have very interesting survey results by the amount of percentages that they use and throw at us. They say that 60% of the people surveyed does not want to sell their shares or open their shares to the children born after 1971. But at the same time, they do not tell us what is the percentage of people of BB&C that were surveyed. Back in 1978, I worked for the Native Association in the Johnson O'Malley program, and I was to survey the school districts within the region here. At that time, there was only 3. But in my grant proposal, I wrote down that I had surveyed 100% of the school districts in this area, which was true. So that the percentage figures can be misleading. And so when we talk about 66% of the people or 70% of the people not wanting to share their shares, what real percentage figure are we talking about on the overall population? I'm sure that there are people out there that cannot read and write and did not send in that survey form. And so their opinion has not been addressed. Like I said, in Portage Creek, I learned how important it was to share, and that has been instilled upon me. And come 1991, if it was up to me, or if someone asked me whether I would be willing to give up some of my shares so that other people or children that were born after December 18, 1971 could benefit from the Land Claim Settlement Act? I would definitely say yes. Because I believe that the survival of the Native people here in Alaska, they have survived so long because their willingness to share. The other day, I was down at the NNN market in my pickup truck, and a man came up and he climbed in my truck. He says, "Tom, could you tell me about 1991? And I said, "Boy, I really don't know. I think I might give you a biased opinion. I think you should go talk with the experts. Go to either to Chug or to BBNC and ask them." He says, "You know," he says, "all of this is happening too fast." He says, "I'm scared." And that was the first time that I ever heard this guy even talk like that, that he was scared of what was happening, because it's all happening too fast. I hope that when it comes down to the final decision on the 1991 issues, that all of the regions will allow the people to make the final decision on the stock, the land, and whether or not we're going to let the children that were born after December 18, 1971 into the corporation. That's all I have.
Yeah, maybe I could just ask you a couple of questions, Mr. Tilden. What about the question of restricting the sale of stock after 1991? Have you thought about that, considered that? And the question whether the people who want to sell should have the right to sell, get out. Any thoughts?
Yeah, the other day I was thinking about that. If it were 100 years ago today that this came up, if a villager wanted to go against what a majority of the people in the village wanted, he would have been an outcast and probably set adrift, because the survival of the village people or the survival of the villages was because they worked as a group. And I think that maybe the descendants should be set adrift.
You would agree with really with the way Mr. Nielsen put it, they would become John Q. Public. That is, they would cease to have any rights.
I think that we have 5 years. We have 5 years ahead of us. We still have time to educate the people on what it would mean to them as a person if they were to want to sell their shares and give up their native heritage.
Right. Well, thanks very much. By the way, if anyone wishes to speak in Yupik, Dora Klein is here to translate.
Нюнам никтим.
Атхапник
диктуучи. Килиан.
Maybe we could start with your name.
Atrapnikaptatum.
Lukilia Pitla.
The Yuchten Kanchtapalutin.
Kalernami Ulhuyakawa. Tolfuidit Kamiawa, you Pashatni. Nuna Leroyak Shater near my dead Nunatin of Kanat.
Mumigakak. Her name's Lukilia Pitla. She grew up in Kalignak. And she moved to Portage Creek. And there in Portage Creek, she filled out some native allotment forms. And she said some of her kids didn't fill any out. And she doesn't understand why.
Well, maybe I could just say something about native allotments. If a person did not apply before December 18th, 1971, that was the last, that was the deadline for applying for a native allotment. So a lot of people got left behind, a lot of people got left out because ANCSA abolished native allotment. So if you didn't file your papers for a native allotment before ANCSA was passed, you can't get one. That's the trouble. A lot of people, thousands, were left out.
December 18, 1971. Can that be resolved now? She's asking.
Well, I don't think so. I think that it's unlikely that Congress would ever open up more native.